You are listening to WXRW LP Milwaukee 104.1 FM and RiverWestRadio.com globally. I am your host, NTSC, and welcome again to The Anti, a weekly primer on freedom. The Anti is anti-authoritarian, anti-capitalist, anti-hierarchy, anti-sexist, anti-racist, anti-fascist, anti-electoralist, and more. If we're against so very much, what do we stand for? The ideals of freedom. In this series, we explore what a free society could look like while recognizing that none of us today are truly free. Having said all that, even though the device that you're listening to this broadcast on probably wasn't free, and that definitely includes computers if you're listening online, the radio waves you are listening to are still free. But WXRW costs money to operate, sadly. The good news is you can help. And there's a few different ways that you can help. You can come and visit us physically. Come on down to 824 East Center Street, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. You can purchase a hat or a mug or a t-shirt. And all the proceeds from that will go directly to supporting the station. And then you'll have some cool looking gear that'll let everybody know that you're supporting community radio. There's a few other ways that you can support us. Go to riverwestradio.com and there will be a link through which you can support our Patreon campaign. There's a few different reward tiers, but really the reward for you is that you would be supporting community radio that lifts marginalized voices and is in your community if you're in River West. If you're listening to us online, you can still absolutely join the Patreon and know that you are a sustaining member that's keeping small free radio alive. And beyond that, if you really like some of the programming that you're listening to on WXRW, and if you have a business, or if you just want to become an underwriter, become an underwriter. Doing so is very easy. And some recent changes that have happened to the scheduling have made it even easier to become an underwriter. So reach out to us, go to riverwestradio.com, become an underwriter, and feel good about supporting local community radio. So I have the pleasure to be in a small theater production with a group of really amazing people. The show is a lot of fun to be in, and I really, really love everyone that I get to act with. They're all really cool. At rehearsal the other day, my phone buzzes in my pocket. I've got it on silent because I'm in rehearsal. So I pick it up and I see that my eldest sister has texted me. And she wanted to know, she's like imploring with me, what's it going to take to get me to vote? She offers to buy me lunch. She's just really desperate for me to vote. And I did not know how to respond. And I struggled with my reply, drafting 7 or 8 different versions before just kind of falling back on emotions and saying that I'd really like to get lunch with her. I'd love to see her. But I don't want to do it about politics. You know, let's get lunch. Let's not make it about politics. I love my sister a lot, and I've mentioned before that I'm very lucky to have family members that I not only love, but also just like a lot as people. So anyone who listens to The Anti with any regularity knows by now that I won't be voting, and I have no qualms in saying that. And I'll probably never vote again. You know, never say never again, blah, blah, blah. And there's, you know, room for anybody to change, and I don't think I'm so perfect that all of my closely held beliefs are, you know, immovable. But for the time being, I can say I don't foresee myself ever voting again. My family is all very politically engaged. My dad volunteers for the DNC on a weekly basis. And I mean, like, even when there isn't an election looming, you know, in the off season, he's there every week. My second oldest sister was a political science major. Basically, my whole little immediate family and, you know, large portions of my extended family are very passionate Democrats, specifically. Some of whom leaning almost towards the democratic socialist kind of side of things. For the most part, they believe very firmly in representative government. And I'm sure I am a grave disappointment to most, if not all of them, for not voting. And I said it before and it bears repeating. The anti and myself, NTSC, are anti-electoralism. Now, note, I used to think I knew what electoralism meant. I thought it meant just electioneering in general. But after actually looking it up, thank goodness for research, evidently I've been using it wrong for a while now. I'm still going to use the term in today's show because it turns out I like the actual definition even more than what I thought it actually meant. So the term was coined originally by Professor Terry Carl of Stanford University, and it means a halfway transition from authoritarian rule toward democratic rule. I think I've made a pretty persuasive argument over the past episodes that there is absolutely nothing democratic about the American Republic and the way that it's organized. So even to say that we're halfway to democracy, I think is really generous. But I want to get back to the text that my sister sent me. She loves me, and I love her, and I really respect her. But I don't think that she respects me, or my stance on this, to be exact. And I haven't been able to discuss it with her, so I can't say for sure, but I think it's a correct assessment that she doesn't respect my stance. Well, that's fine. You know, I don't need people to respect me. My self-worth and my self-esteem is not based on that. And looking at this text, I fought the urge to explain myself and my stance over text, because that's really just, that's like the most terrible way to have, you know, a really important conversation like that. So I'm going to use this opportunity, kind of like a thought experiment, to explain myself yet again, and to explain why I personally, and many anarchists, but certainly not all anarchists, are anti-electoral. And we're going to look at some real-world examples of anarchists. Hopefully we'll have time and their stances, and we'll wrap it all up in a messy little bow, hopefully within 29 minutes. So I'm going to start with me, because I can only speak for myself. And I choose those words very deliberately. So I've harped on this a lot. But perhaps the primary, most important reason I don't vote is because voting gives up your power. I say this all the time in casual conversations. I say it here on WXRW. I can only speak for myself. And that statement works equally well and truthfully if I rearrange some of the words to say only I can speak for myself. Nobody else can speak for me. I would go as far as to say nobody else can speak for you. Maybe that's a bridge too far. If you give anyone else your voice, you are silencing yourself. You know, people like to say that if you don't vote, you've no right to complain about the consequences, right? When in fact, the reality is quite the opposite. To vote is to participate, and participation is a tacit endorsement of the process. Actions speak louder than words, so they say. You can rail against this or that political regime, but if you continue to vote, then you are complicit in endorsing whatever any elected official does and says in your name, whether you voted for them or not. Voting for anyone at all makes you complicit because you have in effect given away your power and your voice to another person. Only I can speak for myself. Nobody else can represent me. That is the primary reason I don't vote. Secondarily, the act of voting grants legitimacy to the very concept that the state should exist. And it grants your approval to the state using any means it deems necessary in imposing its will on the individual. So, to use a modern example ripped from the headlines, this caravan, right, that I just recently learned about. If you voted at all in any of the past elections, you granted power to the state to use violent force if it so wishes to kill those people, you know, who are seeking asylum. If you don't like the current regime, as an example, let's back up to the last president before this one. I don't like using their names because I just don't like saying them. I said before that my family comprises mainly very well-meaning, really, really smart people who consider themselves to, you know, primarily be Democrats. So obviously they voted Democrat in 2008 and 2012. And they got what they wanted. They got a Democratic president, right? In so doing, they gave another human being the power to wield the military arm of the United States. And whether my family liked it or not, their Democrat president launched twice as many drone strikes as the Republican president before him, and in so doing, injured thousands of civilians, killed hundreds more, over 100 of whom were children. Okay? So let's compare that to things that typically Democrats get very angry about. Let's go back and re-examine the tragic shooting at Sandy Hook, which claimed the lives of 20 children. Well, if you voted in 2008, you are complicit in the death of at least 106 children through drone strikes alone. Those were the reported deaths. It's estimated that it may be higher than that. Five times the number of young children who died at Sandy Hook. You are complicit in their death, because your vote legitimized the system that gave one human being the power to wield weapons capable of killing someone thousands of miles away. Your vote gave them that power. I will never grant any such murderous system legitimacy with my vote. Okay, and while we're on the topic of politicians, another reason I'll never vote, I guess if we're counting here, this would be tertiary, is because they lie. And they can lie kind of as much as they want. And already I can kind of, I can hear the cynics running up to complain. Well, let me assure you, we have really hard math on exactly how much every politician lies. Every statement basically ever made by any politician is fact-checked and has been for a while now. And those figures are all available in the public record. So, as a really easy example, in this last big presidential election, there were two major frontrunners for the Democratic nomination. And they both lied basically evenly at about 30% of the time. So let that sink in for a second there. The politicians that a lot of people I personally know wish would have won, both of them, individually, lied on average every 3 out of 10 statements. And in fact, this is kind of sad, I looked it up. The most honest politician in recent years is hilariously Bill Clinton, because he only lies an average of 24% of the time. In a system where literally every politician lies, and there's factual mathematical just numbers there, every politician lies. In a system where every single politician lies, their campaign promises are completely meaningless. And you've seen them to be meaningless. All they need to do is gain favor among their so-called constituents, and then they can do whatever they want when they get elected, because there's no accountability or recourse besides waiting until they're up for re-election and then trying often futilely, to oust them from office, only to try and replace them with someone else who will follow the established routine and continue to lie to you, all right? And I know it's a fallacy, appealing to, mass knowledge or whatever. So what I'm about to say is a fallacious argument, and I'll just say that now, but you know politicians lie. I know politicians lie. We actually have the math to back it up. It's not necessarily a fallacious argument whatsoever. Why would you vote in a system that rewards liars? Also, the very fact that a politician got voted in reinforces in their own head that they deserve to be where they are. And that the majority of people approve of their policies and their opinions, and they approve in their right to dictate the terms of their populace's lives. 4, any vote cast for anyone in this hierarchical structure reinforces the false notion that we are incapable of organizing and thriving without the violent control of the state. A vote for anyone in this system is a vote for the system itself. And this system is anything but functional. This system is repressive, coercive, manipulative, and dangerous. It gives the power to kill with impunity to the police caste and the military arm. It gives all land and property rights to the state by way of eminent domain. It normalizes the system of neoliberal capitalism when both are in no way beneficial and certainly not inevitable. You do not need to be governed. And voting is an admission that you do. Voting is your way of standing up and saying, I need to be governed, personally, me. Casting a vote in this system implies that the majority get to decide what is best for everyone. And that's plainly untrue. Casting a vote in this system equally implies that the majority get to decide what is best for the individual. And that means casting a vote in this system implies that the majority get to decide what is best for you personally. And if you think about it, actually, and Martin and I were just discussing this earlier on another morning, voting is in effect a sort of mob rule. The mob forces its views on the rest of society, whether or not the individual shares those views or those values. The mob, through the extension of the military and police arm of the state, enforces its views through violence. 5. I've heard it said that an informed electorate will choose the right candidate to occupy seats of power. And that's a ridiculous thing to even consider for me. What in the world is an informed electorate? Surely it has never actually existed to the benefit of the electoral class. The only choices available to a person are the people who are financed enough to actually run for office. 1, which biases people with financial resources, which biases them to represent their peers who are other financially well-off people. Anyone's ability to make any kind of truly informed decision is approaching zero, since they are only able to get the information that's actually made available by a very biased mainstream media, which has a very powerfully vested interest in maintaining the status quo. Not to mention just the indoctrination by the school system, which starts at a very, very young age. There is no such thing as an informed electorate. And there is no such thing as any politician who is legitimate or worthy of speaking for you or wielding your power. 5, 6? It hardly matters. I really like this one because this is a neat little mathematical reason. And I found this one online somewhere, and I'll have to try and find the original source and I'll have to try and quote it later because I really liked it a lot and it had some other interesting points that I might have stolen some of my other thinking points through. Anyway, okay. So you personally do not have the right to create laws that your fellow neighbors need to obey, right? You don't. You don't have that ability. You can't do that. So what in the world imbues you with the power to delegate that power to somebody else when you yourself don't have it? It's kind of like saying, okay, so I can't fly. I just can't do that. You know, I can't wave my arms and levitate. But I will delegate Jack over there to fly and then expecting Jack to fly. Like, it's tantamount to that. Maybe that doesn't make sense. Maybe it's not the best metaphor, but hopefully you kind of get what I'm saying. And any neoliberal would probably say, well, all right, you know, my vote gives them that power because that's the laws and blah, 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 blah. And I'm saying, yes, exactly. That's insane. It's ridiculous that a bunch of strangers you'll never meet can get together and decide that X, Y, or Z person will do what they say, right? So they make that person into a candidate and they put that person in front of you and they spend billions of dollars, you know, just shoving this person in your face. And that person lies to you, you know, and regurgitates the lies which are written to them until you decide that you like them. And then you get together with millions of other strangers and you check a box with that person's name next to it. And you give them the power to do literally whatever they want, essentially. And more so, you give the power to the people controlling them. You give the power to anyone who can purchase that person, right? So then maybe that person will get up one day and they decide that they'll decide whether or not you're allowed to identify as the gender that you are. Or maybe they'll wake up one day and they'll decide that they want to bomb a bunch of people thousands of miles away. Or maybe they'll get up and they'll decide that they want to destabilize a country so corporations can get a foothold and get cheap labor or cheap resources. Or maybe they'll wake up one day and they'll decide that they want to privatize yet more of the social safety net and do away with what few environmental protections actually remain. And anything that they decide, you gave them the power to do so by voting. But I didn't vote. So I didn't give them that power. You did. You did that. And your only recourse, if they wake up one day and say, you don't get to be the gender that you are, or I'm going to bomb these people, or we're going to kill these people, or we're going to disenfranchise these people, your only recourse, as dictated by the law, is to wait 2 years, or 4 years, or 8 years, or however many years, while they are doing whatever they want, and then try and do it all over again and expect a different result. And that's insane. And voting is so good for the established status quo. There are already 22 countries where it is mandated by law, where not voting is illegal. Not supporting the state is illegal. And that's Argentina, Australia, Belgium, Bolivia, Brazil, the Congo, Costa Rica, the Dominican Republic, Ecuador, Egypt, Greece, Honduras, Lebanon, Luxembourg, Mexico, Nauru, Panama, Paraguay, Peru, Singapore, Thailand, and Uruguay. So if you are a citizen of any of those countries, you are mandated to vote by law. So I mentioned before that there are anarchists who choose to vote, and there are anarchists who choose not to. Noam Chomsky has stated for the record that he thinks this election cycle to be maybe the most important of his lifetime, and perhaps in the history of the whole world. We want to be that, you know, blatantly honest. And he's been on Democracy Now! Recently, coming out and saying that. Noam Chomsky is an anarchist. He's specifically an anarcho-syndicalist in particular, and he's written a number of books on the topic of anarchism. So in an interview, this one's from 2013, he makes his stance perfectly clear that he is an anarchist and that he thinks we ought to be moving towards a more egalitarian society. But he thinks that there is some influence yet imposed by the people over the positions of power. So we're going to quote him now. This is Noam Chomsky from the 2013 interview. He says, "It's better to be free than to be a slave. It's better to be able to make your own decisions than to have someone else make decisions and force you to observe them. I don't think you really need an argument for that. The thing you need an argument for and should give an argument for is how can we best proceed in that direction? And there are lots of ways within the current society. One way, incidentally, is through use of the state to the extent that it is democratically controlled. In the long run, anarchists would like to see the state eliminated, but it exists alongside of private power. I should mention here, when he says private power, he means like huge corporate interests and, you know, all the various industrialists who would like to see kind of, you know, this neoliberal vision of the world perfectly enacted. But he says anarchists would like to see the state eliminated, but it exists alongside of private power, and the state is, at least to a certain extent, under public influence and control. Could be much more so. And it provides devices to constrain the much more dangerous forces of private power. Rules for safety and health in the workplace, for example, or ensuring that people have decent health care, let's say, many other things like that. They're not going to come about through private power, quite the contrary, but they can come about through the use of the state system under limited democratic control to carry forward reformist measures." So Chomsky sees the state, to what little extent it is actually democratically controlled, as a useful tool to carry forward at least some reformist measures. And there are other anarchists that even have entered into kind of the election cycle. Proudhon famously ran for elected office. I disagree that the state is a useful tool, and I'm going to let someone else who's smarter than I am do the talking in this regard. I'm going to leave you all with an excerpt from the American poet and civil rights activist and author Audre Lorde. She said, "The master's tools will never dismantle the master's house. They may allow us temporarily to beat him at his own game, but they will never enable us to bring about genuine change." Thank you all so much for tuning into The Anti here on WXRW River West Radio. I've been your host, NTSC, and I will be back again next week to discuss further topics as they relate to freedom and our truly awesome shared potential. Past episodes can be found at creamcitymedia.com/anti, and more information about the show can be found on riverwestradio.com.